If I can have your attention, we will go ahead and get started with our program this morning. I want to welcome all of you to another meeting of the First Friday Breakfast Club, an association of gay and bisexual men and the largest private breakfast club in the state of Iowa. We have something of a tradition inviting those who are here for the first time to be introduced by their host or stand up and introduce themselves. It is not a requirement, but if there are those who are here for the first time, we'd appreciate getting to know you. Yes. Welcome. Welcome.
I'm John Strange, my first meeting, and I am from Austin.
Welcome.
Yes. Steve Sears from the South Side.
Welcome.
And Aaron Todd, not my first time, but it's been a few years.
Welcome back. Others? Okay, well, those of you who are regulars, if you'll look around, if you see any unfamiliar faces who didn't introduce themselves, introduce yourself to them and encourage them to come back another time. We have a number of items I want to bring to your attention. First is our book exchange in the foyer. If you have books that you want to share, you can bring them, and if you see a book out there that you would find interesting, you're welcome to borrow it. There's no checkout system, and you can keep it as long as you want. Okay, and thanks to Scott Kuchnow, my partner, for coordinating that. Let's see. This evening is the Liberty and Justice dinner at the arena. I don't know whether they're sold out, but you can get a hold of almost any of the Democratic presidential campaigns, and you can arrange for free tickets to get into it. And then there's a Des Moines Gay Men's Chorus event this evening also. Joe, Brad, do you have anything to say about it?
It's over at the Conservatory on East Smith, 5:30 to 8:30. It is Hamlet. It's a mix up between Hamlet and Oklahoma.
Okay, well, that's quite a bit. Okay. Then in terms of upcoming events, next Tuesday, the 5th, is Election Day. Now, you have to vote. And I say that in the sense that you can't not vote. If you don't go to the polls, you basically voted that you'll go along with whatever the majority of everybody else thought. So you vote regardless, one way or another. And I encourage all of us to be out there voting actively, affirmatively, and going to the polls and doing it. There are a number of elections going on, and that's city and Board of Supervisors, so city and county. So virtually everyone here has, who lives in central Iowa, has an election to vote on Tuesday. There's a Board of Directors meeting on Tuesday, also at 6:30 at Scott's and my home. So if any member is interested in attending, you're certainly welcome. Just get a hold of one of us, and we'll give you easy-to-follow directions. Our newsletter, monthly newsletter, copy deadline will be 11th. That's a week from next Monday. So for those who regularly contribute and anyone else who would be interested in contributing, that's your copy deadline. Get that copy to me, and we'll dress it up as best we can and make you look like a great author. Rick Miller has an announcement. Rick.
Actually, two really quick ones. You'll notice some Pete Buttigieg people. Those are from Logan. He was not able to be here today because he was so we have 100,000 signs right now. That group will be from 3 to 5 at Cole Commons today. If you're interested in going to that. We wanted you to know that this larger piece is actually a caucus. If you are planning to caucus and would like to put your name down, you can do that today, now. The tent on the table from the Pride Center, but that's not an endorsement necessarily. So So many of you will get individual invitations because we have a wonderful donor list and a lot of different LGBT groups that supported us this last year. They will all be honored and recognized at that event. It is a dessert event.
Thanks, Rick. Okay, and then lastly, on your tables, you should find a sheet that looks like this, and it is distributed by Primetimers. If this just isn't enough for you, why, Primetimers offers you an opportunity to get together again and again and again. This month alone, they've got events today, 7th, 8th, 11th, 13th, 17th, 19th, 20th, 21st, and 25th. So there are many, many opportunities and a variety of interest areas that they pursue. And on the back side of it is information that you can fill out and join. Okay. Now, with that, I will turn to Ken Hansen, who's going to introduce our speaker this morning. Ken.
Good morning. Dr. John Carstensen is an internal medicine physician with Unity Point in Des Moines, where he diagnoses, treats, and manages care for adult patients. Dr. Carstensen frequently teaches medical students and residents, and he serves on several advisory committees for the multi-state healthcare provider. He joined Unity Point in 2003. In 2009, he moved to Key West, Florida, where he opened Carstensen Internal Medicine. Since he missed the cold weather and his family and friends, he returned to Des Moines and Unity Point in 2012. More recently, Dr. Carstensen was actively involved in developing Unity Point's new LGBTQ clinic, a multidiscipline practice focused on serving the medical needs of the LGBTQ community. In addition to his work with the new clinic, he frequently consults with other physicians on the medical needs of LGBTQ patients and has worked with various advocacy groups to help ensure that this community has access to medical care and resources. He completed his residency with the University of Iowa Des Moines Internal Residency Program, and he received his medical degree from the University of Iowa College of Medicine. He also holds a Bachelor of Science degree in Aerospace Engineering from Iowa State University. I'm kind of interested in how you go from aerospace engineering to internal medicine. He grew up in Wyoming, not the state, the eastern town, small town of Wyoming in Iowa. He and his partner of 14 years, Scott, live in Des Moines with their dog and cat. John and Scott are active supporters of United Way, One Iowa, Matthew Shepard Scholarship Program, Iowa Safe Schools, and other LGBTQ-focused causes. In his spare time, I don't know how he has any spare time, he enjoys playing volleyball, traveling, working on his home and yard, and watching Iowa State athletics. Please help me welcome Dr. Carstensen.
Well, good morning, everyone. Thanks for coming in such a cold and early morning here. And I will say this is the first time I've been to the First Mornings Club as well, Friday Morning Club. So I didn't stand earlier since I would be standing here for quite a while. So, all right. And that, I do get asked that question a lot about my undergrad and going to med school. And that's probably why I'm late half the time in clinic, because it's always a common explanation. I won't give it to you guys here. You can ask me later about that. All right, well, I'm going to be talking about something I'm very passionate about, and that is LGBTQ healthcare. And I appreciate you guys allowing me to come and talk about this. I'm part of the Unity Point Internal Medicine Clinic and the LGBTQ Clinic, and we are literally right across the street in the John Stoddard Cancer Building on the second floor. I'll talk a little bit more about how we started the clinic, when it was started, and then also some unique things amongst the LGBTQ community for healthcare, and hopefully that will trigger some things the next time you're at your doctor to talk about. All right, so hopefully we'll see if this works here. All right, so I just wanted to give kind of a foundation to talk about some of the disparities within the LGBT community within healthcare. Some of these you probably know about, some you may not. One of the big things is with our young patients and the LGBTQ youth, 2 to 3 times more likely to attempt suicide. and more likely to be homeless. So 40% of our youth homeless population is LGBTQ. Many a times, unfortunately, they've been kicked out of homes when they've come out. Lesbians are also less likely to get preventative health care services, such as pap smears, mammograms. Part of this is they just had bad experiences going to the doctor. Unfortunately, part of it is also the healthcare community. Doctors may make assumptions about things they may not need based on their sexual activity. And gay men were higher risk for HIV and STDs, which I'll talk about in a little bit, and especially men of color, higher risk as well. And transgender individuals have a very high prevalence of STDs and HIV. Also higher levels of victimization, mental health issues and suicide, and less likely to have health insurance. And elderly LGBTQ individuals also have unique circumstances. Part of it is more isolated, generational differences and concerns. One of the things, you know, when someone has to go to a nursing care facility, you know, you don't have the choice of what doctor sees you there. So they're kind of at the hands of that community and that health care center on what their policies are. And then finally, we also have higher rates of tobacco, alcohol, and substance abuse. And so that's just kind of a foundation why we need such a clinic. Here are the providers for the healthcare clinic. Amy Bingaman, she is our OBGYN doctor that works there. Phenomenal doctor. Initially, when we were putting together the clinic, I was wondering, is Amy going to be that busy? And she's probably the busiest person in the practice. And myself and Angie Noblock are both internal medicine doctors. For those of you, I don't know if everyone knows internal medicine, but basically it's primary care for adults. We don't see any children. It's only adult medicine. And Wendy Harris and Rich Robes, they are both pediatricians in the practice. And Matthew Moline is a family practice doctor. And then John Lestrange is our pharmacist here. He did not have a screenshot for Unity Point, so I had to steal his picture from Facebook. So I probably should have asked you that, John, before I did that. But it's a good picture. So our clinic, we started in April 9th of 2019, this year. And we modeled our clinic after the Cedar Falls Unity Point Clinic. They were the first ones in the state that had an LGBTQ clinic for Unity Point, and they started in January of 2018. We are open the second Tuesday of every month from 5 to 8 p.m. Initially, it was 5:30 to 7:30, but we realized pretty quickly we needed to expand those hours, and we will be expanding more as well. And all providers and staff are Safe Zone trained, so all of us went through 4 hours of Safe Zone training by One Iowa prior to starting the clinic. And all the people working there had to apply for it. It wasn't just we picked out people. They had to apply and show interest. Ray is one of our nurses in the clinic, and I think he just put down I'm gay for a lot of the questions on there. So but we are very fortunate to have him there. And then we also, I would like to give a shout out to Unity Point leadership. They were very instrumental in really pushing this through as well, and kind of giving us anything we needed to get this going and get this started. So I'm very, feel fortunate to work for Unity Point. And we provide quite a bit of services. So we do physicals, wellness checks, cancer screening, HIV, STD screening. We manage chronic diseases. Like I said, I'm internal medicine, so I take care of adult patients. So if someone's diabetic and they're in the LGBTQ community and they want to come see us, we will take care of everything. Mental health assessments, we have Erin Kennedy's a counselor therapist that's part of the clinic that's there, and she can help triage when patients come in, and if they need further follow-up and care by therapists and counselors, she can help get that set up for the patient. We have a lab on site as well. We do prescribing of PrEP for pre-exposure prophylaxis for HIV. We do management of that, monitoring of that. We do transgender hormone therapy, both starting patients on hormones and then following them along through their transition. And Dr. Bingaman, like I mentioned, she's our OB-GYN doctor. So she also will see patients before and after surgeries, and she does hysterectomies, not in the clinic, but in the hospital, but can set up patients for that. And John Lestrange is our pharmacist on site. So he can do education on the hormones and medication changes, also can do administrations and teach patients how to give their own injections there. Keep going the wrong way. There. And so far, like I said, we're open one night a month, but since April, we have 102 patients that have either been seen or will be seen in the clinic. 20% are less than 18, and our youngest patient is 10. And 70% identify as transgender. And as I mentioned before, we knew we were going to be busy. So it was something we had always anticipated we would probably need to expand the clinic. Right now we are looking at adding an additional night in the spring per month, and probably will be further expanding after that as well. We just need to train more providers, get more staff trained, and they will also go through the Safe Zone training. And we also have a compassion fund specifically for the clinic, so employees at Unity Point can donate to that fund. Anyone outside the organization can donate to the fund. And that can be used for patients if they, you know, either don't have insurance or if some of the copays are expensive or things aren't covered lab-wise, that can be used for that as well. And I just kind of a segue to the rest of my talk here. For assumptions in healthcare, I gave this similar talk this summer to the family practice residents here in town, and just to try to get them to not make assumptions about patients, not even about their gender, but who are they sexually active with? Are they sexually active? And I thought that was a doctor has had talked to their the residents about that before, so I thought it was just a unique segment there. All right, so. Some things I wanted to talk about today were what, as gay men, bisexual men, what should you think about or what should you talk to your doctor about? And one of the big things, vaccinations. I talk to my patients about hepatitis A, hepatitis B, should be vaccinated for those. And then the HPV vaccine, which is the human papillomavirus vaccine, that has now been approved through the age of 45. Now, the problem is insurance may not pay for it, but it is able to be given through age 45. And HPV is what causes cervical cancer in women, but anal cancer in both men and women, and also head and neck cancer. And I also recommend talking about STD screening if your doctor doesn't bring it up, something to talk about. Also, PrEP or pre-exposure prophylaxis for prevention of HIV. I recommend talking about that if indicated. And then anal pap smears, I put a question mark on that because we don't have guidelines yet that say when we should do these, how often, and so forth. We do know for HIV-positive men, there is a 40 to 80 times higher rate of anal cancer. So for those patients, I would definitely recommend it. But even then, we still don't have set guidelines yet on that. There is a major study that will be coming out that hopefully will kind of give us more data on this and give us a better timeline of when we should do it and who we should do it on. And then I also recommend that be honest with your provider about drug use, alcohol use, mental health issues, depression, anxiety. This is something we see a lot, and we really want patients to be honest with their provider, and hopefully you have that good level of communication. You can talk about those things. And one of the big things I can mention is STD screening. So this is the 2018 statistics. This is from the CDC, and this is for everyone. So this isn't just for LGBTQ patients, but for everyone. And as you can see, there's quite a few STDs. Chlamydia is the number one one. And the big thing I wanted you to look at that, and I don't think you're going to be able to see it, but underneath each one of those numbers, it talks about the rate of increase of these STDs. And for chlamydia, it looks like it is 19% increase since 2014. It's in the 60% increase for gonorrhea and in the 70% increase for syphilis. So these are things that we are seeing more and more of. And young patients and then gay and bisexual men are have a big proportion of these. And this was actually an article that just was out in the Gazette yesterday that talked about just the alarming rates of STDs that are occurring in Iowa. Part of it, they surmise, is due to funding cuts, but I won't get political this early in the morning on that. There's other things that also probably are part of that as well, but it is something that we have to pay attention to. And if you're ever interested, Polk County Health, you can go to their website. You can see all the statistics for STDs in the area. They do it by week. So this is just fresh off the press last week. The cases here just in Polk County, and once again, this is for the entire population, not just LGBTQ patients, kind of mirrors what's going on in the U.S. Chlamydia is the number one that we see. And then these are the statistics so far for the year. So quite a few STDs that we see in the community. And this one, I hopefully you can see that really the main thing I wanted you guys to look at for this was just the yellow line is Iowa, and the blue or black line is the United States. So this is looking at the rate of increase or percentage increase for STDs, and this first one's for chlamydia. And as you can see, over the years, yellow is now above the blue. So we already are at a higher percentage of STD cases than average for chlamydia. Gonorrhea is on its way to that. And then syphilis is already above that as well. And then this map, it doesn't display the best. Basically, this is just a map that talks about the number of STD cases per 100,000 population. I was kind of right in the middle. We're, I think, ranked in the 30s out of the states for that. The South is almost twice Iowa's rates. So Louisiana, Mississippi, North and South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama have very high rates. Alaska is kind of an odd one. They had a huge chlamydia outbreak, and so their numbers are very skewed, but they're like double what the rates are in Iowa. And for STDs and men having sex with men, the big push, probably one of the biggest things I want everyone to take away from this is most STDs are, there's no symptoms with them. So I think a lot of people think, I only need to get screened if I'm having symptoms. And I know it's not the best thing to talk about in the morning, but, if you're having discharge or burning when you pee, people come in when that happens. But they don't come in necessarily if they're not having any symptoms. And just to prove that, when they did a study, 86% of rectal chlamydia infections have no symptoms. 84% of gonorrhea infections have no symptoms. And same thing, if you get an infection in the throat, most of those are also showing no symptoms. And one of my pet peeves within the healthcare community is I will see this a lot where someone may have symptoms, they have throat discomfort that's not getting better. They go to another provider, they get swabbed for strep throat, never really talk much about their sexual history, and then they come and see me and we talk about lots of stuff. And that comes up, and I'm like, well, did they swab your throat for gonorrhea or chlamydia? And they will usually say no. Or they may say, well, they did a urine test. They had me pee in a cup, and it was negative, so I don't have it. Gonorrhea and chlamydia are different. Like HIV, syphilis, we could do with a blood test. Gonorrhea and chlamydia, you really need to have testing done at whatever site that an infection occurred. So if you're having oral sex, you should have a throat swab. If you are a bottom, you should be having a rectal swab. And if you are top or oral sex, you should be also having a urine test for gonorrhea and chlamydia. And if we only did a urine test, we're going to miss 75% of STDs. So it is really important to talk with your provider about these things. And the bottom one there, just make sure you get screened at all sites, depending on your sexual activity. I have a big thumb, so I keep hitting the wrong button there. And the other reason STDs are, very important is they do increase your risk for HIV. So the theory with this is if you have irritation, inflammation, a lesion somewhere, there's a higher chance that HIV virus could get in and cause an infection. And for chlamydia, you can see the 2 points there are if you've had a couple of rectal chlamydia infections, you have an 8 times higher risk of getting HIV in your lifetime. And if you have just one episode, you have a 1 in 15 chance of getting HIV in 1 year. And gonorrhea is very similar. So 1 in 15 men who have anal sex, rectal gonorrhea, 1 in 15 will get HIV in a year, looking at all the statistics. And syphilis is the bad one. 20% of men who have syphilis infection in 10 years, 20% of them will be HIV positive. And then this statistic, this still shocks me. It's when this first came out, it kind of blew me away, and another take-home point. So the difference in rates of HIV amongst men of color, 1 in 2 African-American men who have sex with men, 1 in 2, 50%, are going to get HIV in their lifetime. And for Hispanics, it's 1 in 4, and Caucasians, it's 1 in 11. So, you know, we need to do as a healthcare profession a better job of getting out there and getting this message across and making healthcare more accessible. And for, I don't know if you can see too much on the right side there, but for bottoming, we kind of all know it's higher risk, 13 times higher risk than topping for acquiring HIV. And in general, men having sex with men, 83 times higher risk than the heterosexual population. But we can do something about it. I'm assuming most people here have heard of PrEP. Has everyone heard of this, hopefully? So PrEP is pre-exposure prophylaxis for HIV. I think one of the statistics is it's like less than 10% of people eligible for PrEP are on it. So it is a strong push. We're trying to get other providers to know about this and also patients. A lot of patients are educating their provider about this because they haven't heard about it. So we're trying to get the word out and be proactive and talk to your provider about this. But Truvada was approved for PrEP in 2012. It's been out in the market for longer than that for treatment for HIV, but for PrEP it was specifically approved in 2012. It's one tablet a day. It's over 99% effective in preventing HIV if it's taken every day. And it is crazy expensive. It's like $1,500 to $2,000 a month. Most insurances do cover it, and the company does have a copay program. They pay up to $7,200 per year. So if someone has a deductible, you know, $30-$50 bucks a month, that copay card takes it away. So for most people, 90-95%, it is free. Now, there's a new one on the market. So Descovy is the newest drug that was approved for PrEP just within the past month or so. It's the same manufacturers as Truvada, and it's actually the same, basically the same drugs. It's just one of the drugs is a little different formulation that is safer for the bones and the kidney. Also over 99% effective in preventing HIV. Big key is making sure people take it daily. So that's the big thing we have to do as providers is just make sure patients are taking that every single day. And then the final thing is someone who is HIV positive, another way we can prevent spread is if they are on appropriate medication and they are undetectable, they cannot transmit the virus. So that's what the U Equal U campaign is about as well. All right, so in summary, basically I really want you guys to hopefully feel open and talk with your provider about, you know, your sexual history and activity. And that may mean coming out to your doctor. You know, there are patients that may not feel comfortable talking about these things, and the doctor may not know because they maybe never pressed or talked about these issues. So I want you to just be open and proactive and get appropriate vaccinations. Like I said, hepatitis A, hepatitis B, we recommend for everyone. And then also that HPV vaccine, if you're in that age range, something to talk about. Ask for STD screening if you're at risk. So I always talk to my patients about this. You know, if a couple's monogamous and they're not having sex with anyone else and they've been screened before, I don't tell them they have to be screened anymore. But if someone says, well, I think we are, or maybe. I'm usually grabbing the swabs because it's better to be safe than sorry. And triple screen, throat screen, rectal screen, urine testing. If you're sexually first, you really should be doing all three. Think about PrEP if you don't know much about it. Look into it, talk to your provider about this, but it is something that we can really decrease spread of HIV by taking a pill a day. Safe sex practices, we still want to educate patients to use condoms. You know, condoms, or without condoms, you still can get all the other STDs as well, so condoms do decrease that risk. And then finally, kind of just for everyone, get your flu shot. So the last of it. So, and once again, our clinic, that's our address, our phone number, second Tuesday of every month, 5 to 8. That will change next year sometime. We'll have additional hours as well. And if we would be happy to see anyone, if, you know, they want to come and see us or give us a holler. All right. Well, thanks for letting me come in and chat with everyone here. And if you have any questions... Yes.
You kind of alluded to it. How do you handle the uninsured, underinsured situation, given that this seems to be more prevalent within your population?
That's a huge issue. We are in the process of working with Polk County Health to see about having some funding or having them do some of our screening as well, since they have grant money to cover some of the STD screening and so forth. But that is, you're very well, very correct. It's a big percentage of the population that are underinsured or without insurance have more of these STDs and conditions. And that's part of the reason we have that compassion fund, is to be able to make sure that patients can come and not feel like, you know, if they can't pay, they're not going to be turned away.
And it affects the willingness of people to seek medical attention if they don't have the resources.
Mm-hmm. You're correct, and we do see that where patients, even with testing, if their insurance doesn't cover it very well, they're less apt to come back and do that. And those are things that we're trying to work out, like I said, with some of that fund money and using other organizations together to try to provide those services.
You work a lot with the project of primary healthcare.
Yep, and with Polk County Health Department. And you had it, sir.
Is there any data on, like, men that are not out, that are gay or bisexual, whom HIV transmission?
That would be, I think, is a very good question, and something I do talk to patients about with just all the apps that are out there and with hookups and so forth, that sometimes if someone on there isn't out necessarily, they may have been, they're less likely probably to go get tested or screened. And so that does increase the risk most likely because they just never have been tested. But in terms of specifics, unfortunately, none that I can give you because they're probably not likely to come out and be part of a study.
It's pretty common here. I mean, I'm from San Francisco. Yeah. It's a different deal. One of the questions I had on Truvada, I thought the FDA had a 7-year... But like you said, 2012, we're in 2019. Mm-hmm. So Truvada costs $1,500 to $2,000 a month. Shouldn't that be coming up for generic after 7 years, or how does that work?
So it has been approved to be generic. Okay. And this is just my personal thoughts. You guys can take it with a grain of salt. So we see this all the time when it comes to a lot of the drugs, is once a drug starts to come closer to being off patent, a new version of the drug comes available, and then that's promoted and pushed, and then the other drug goes generic and people don't use it as much. The problem I see with this is when Truvada goes generic, which, like I said, it has the capability, is a company going to take it over? Is someone going to be willing to make it? We all know about it, but in terms of general population numbers, it's probably, my hunch is, not going to be extremely profitable for companies, and so there may not be a big push for companies to try to produce it and compete for it. So that's one of the things I think that's not why no one's jumping out and making the generic for it.
So even though it becomes generic, they just don't make the drug because they can't make money doing it?
That's a possibility. We see that with other drugs.
Okay.
Where, and sometimes the government has to step in and basically say this drug has to be made, regardless of financial gain for that. I know it's not a good situation.
It's a crazy situation.
Though the other thing I will say, though, in with the Affordable Care Act, one of the things, so there's it's a United States Preventative Healthcare Task Force, and they make recommendations that insurance basically follows. And if something is considered a very good screening test, like colonoscopies, mammograms, that forces insurance companies to have to pay for it. And Truvada did get that indication within the past year, but that won't go into effect until 2021. So right now, if everything stays the same, insurance should have to pay for Truvada 100%. Even the cost of testing and doctor's visit should be included in that, but who knows what may happen. So.
Like to see the cost.
The post, since I'm the old man in the room, the post 65 people were on PrEP.
Yep.
Before I turned 65, my Blue Cross and Blue Shield was taking care of it nicely. Now I have a huge copay.
Yep. And unfortunately, with that, then you can't use the copay program.
Are medical professionals advocating for the senior citizen that laws should change in that regard?
Well, and that's.
We treat kidney patients rather than have them get sick.
Yep, it's a huge thing we see throughout with Medicare and any of the state programs, so Medicaid and then the federal programs, Medicare, TRICARE for military insurance. All of these incentives that the drug companies provide are not allowed once you go onto Medicare. And so that money, that $7,200 per year, is off the table. And those are things to be active, you know, in politics to try to get some of these laws changed. But that's, we see that, like I said, with many, many of our patients for all different types of drugs. Okay.
I know you didn't want to get political. Do you see a lot of this STD rises coincide with the closing of Planned Parenthood?
That is what several of the articles talk about, is just the access to care. Like we're talking about just not having funding. These tests are expensive. You can do these tests at home. I don't know if anyone's ever seen advertisements for, I think NERCS is one of the companies that does it. You can do the rectal swabs, throat swabs, HIV, syphilis tests at home. I think it's $200 to $250 to have that done, what it costs in the clinic. And if you take that away, I mean, that's a huge ton of money. And to give that bill to someone, they're not going to come back. And so that is an issue with the funding, and with Planned Parenthood not getting some of the federal funding, that's a huge, huge issue. And unfortunately, probably will only get worse.
I think the big takeaway is that, you know, you need to come out to your doctor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you're sexually active, you need to be responsible and be tested every 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think those messages are going to go across enough. Because when doctors don't, you know, my experience has been working with a safe zone training at Des Moines University. Of course, the time doctors don't even ask you whether or not you're sexually active.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to do a lot of medical profession to do just what you're doing.
Yep.
And that is to ask people about are you sexually active and with who and what are you doing?
Yep. And you'd be appalled to know just how little training is. When I was in medical school at Iowa, we had our LGBT training was group sessions where they invited patients within the community to come and just sit down and have a group talk. No formal training, wasn't required. So, you know, that Iowa's gotten better with that, but there's still some medical schools that don't have any LGBT as part of their curriculum. I think you had one question there.
I think you have a great staff. I think you were honored by One Iowa, am I correct?
Mm-hmm.
But there's also at least two others, Primary Healthcare and UCS, that does a lot in this field. You have a 3-hour window every month. How does that all work out? Because the other places don't have a 3-hour window, right? They're open for this. Are you actually open all the time at specifically for?
Well, I so my regular clinic during the day is at the same location. So I probably, my patient population is probably 20-25% LGBTQ. So Ray's there during the day. John's there during the day. My nurse, CMA, is also there during the day as well. So I do take care of a lot of patients during standard work hours as well as some of our other providers. The benefit of having the LGBTQ clinic is just having a safe place for people to come and feel comfortable in the waiting room where, you know, they don't feel like maybe they're being looked at or people are judging them. Everyone is trained and everyone's there for the same reason. But yes, we do a lot during the day too.
You said Descovy was approved, was broadly approved? I got my provider yesterday and he said he was awaiting approval.
So it's been approved for FDA. I think the study was the Discover trial that came out. I think it was brought out like in March, and then it just recently, or first part of October, is when it was approved. So I would, like I said, still talk with your provider about that. But it is there. Sometimes insurance, depending on their plans, they may not. Next year is when it may be kicked in. If they I don't know if they'll retroactively now cover it, but it'd be something to talk to them about.
In 2015. Truvada actually went generic in Thailand first and sold there as 10M. So it shows me that there's a political opportunity in terms of to say why we have these really long periods of coverage and protection before they come off patent.
And if you want, you can watch it on YouTube when Alexandria Cortez was grilling the Gilead CEO about Truvada. You know, I think her point, I think it's $8 in New Zealand or something, some other country. And it just really brings home that point. Why is it $2,000 here, $8 in another country?
It's 12 euros in Ireland.
Yeah. Did you have one, Michael?
Pending merger with Sanford Health, mm-hmm. is there any potential impact?
At this point, we don't see any potential impact with regards to that. We're still, like I said, I don't know of all of the specifics on what the merger is going to entail. We've been told that it's not going to change any of our day-to-day operations. So my hunch is it shouldn't change anything. Okay. One more. So a couple of questions there. So Truvada, it was approved for HFA treatment, and it can be used in patients that have some kidney problems, but it's an every other day dosing for those patients. But it was not approved. It wasn't studied for every other day for PrEP. So that's one of the questions about the kidney issue. The other issue is the on-demand PrEP. It is an option. I don't usually recommend it for most patients because it's a little bit more complex. You basically have to take two pills between 2 and 24 hours before having sex, and then another pill 24 hours later, and then another pill 24 hours after that. And my concern with that is, let's say you're going to go out, you're like, it's going to be a fun night tonight, you take your two pills, and then something happens, nothing happens. And then the next night, what do you do? Do you take two again? Do you take one? And I think it just makes it more complicated. And then also, you know, there are side effects with the medication, and GI side effects are one of the big ones with Truvada, and that's something if you get sick to your stomach, if you get diarrhea, is it something you really want to be going out and doing? But it is an option. The other thing with that, it was a very small study. So with Truvada and Descovy, you're looking at, you know, like thousands and thousands of patients. When they did the study for on-demand PrEP, it was 200 people in one group and 200 people in the other. And when they looked at the data, the people who were in the group for on-demand PrEP took it 5 days on average. So they're actually very sexually active, the fact that they took 5 days per week. And that's pretty much the same benefit if you miss 2 days a week on daily Truvada. So, you know, to me, I still recommend the daily prep. And if someone does have kidney problems, at least now we have another option. Well, thank you again, everyone.
Thank you very much.
And, John, it's our tradition to give a token of appreciation to our speakers, so I have a recording of the Des Moines Gay Men's Chorus for you. I'll get it to you after. Yes, thank you. Well, Dr. Carstensen knows my partner Scott and I inside and out. And I just want to point out to you that when I was a little boy, doctors made house calls. Not so much anymore, but this morning we had a gay doctor come and make a house call on a group of 60 gay men. Welcome. Thank you very much for what you're doing in our community. Okay. If you want to hear what Dr. Carstensen had to say, or someone you know missed it and wants to hear what he had to say, you can visit ffbciowa.org, and we have audio recordings of our speakers, and you can go back as far as you want to hear some of our outstanding speakers, such as the one we had this morning. And we're going to have another at our December meeting, December the 6th. I try around December to bring in someone with a sort of religious kind of bent to him. And this will be Matt Unger. He is the new executive director of the Des Moines Area Religious Council. Should be interested, and you won't want to miss. And then January the 3rd, our speaker will be Senator Claire Selsey. And you definitely won't want to miss that one either. And we've decided that the 3rd is far enough past the first of the year that we can go ahead and have our meeting without interruption. So we'll look forward to seeing you again on December the 6th. Thanks for being here.